Are you feeling burnt out, overwhelmed, like you're just an Uber driver to your kids' endless appointments? Do you wonder, is this all there is? Stop driving around and try something different. Book in with Body and Mind Online for expert speech therapy, occupational therapy, psychologist and counsellors via telehealth. I founded Body and Mind Online 5 years ago, and it has since been one of the most inclusive therapy centres in the country. This podcast is my passion project. But I've realized that by not openly recommending Body and Mind Online, I'm leaving many of you to navigate the daunting task of finding the right providers on your own. Stop the struggle and get the support that you and your family deserve. Visit adhdmums.com.au and visit the therapy page to take the first step forward towards a balanced life with Body and Mind Online. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to the next episode of ADHD Mums. Today we have Cara Lynch here. Welcome to you, Cara. Cara lives in Sydney. She has a husband and 2 children, and she teaches at an all-girls school, teaching design, technology, and textiles. Her daughter was diagnosed with ADHD when she was 5. And since completing the questionnaire for her, Cara has realized how much she relates to all the areas. And now at 41, she has just discovered that she's ADHD as well. So, Cara, the reason that you contacted me and the reason that I got you on the show was because you sent me an email around burnout and boundaries. Could you give us a little overview about why you contacted about that theme?
I went through a pretty rough period towards the end of last year. Although my daughter was diagnosed at the age of 5, and I definitely saw some similarities between the two of us, it took me a really long time to actually, you know, take the steps forward and get myself some help. And also, I think I had a bit of that imposter syndrome at the very beginning, even though I ticked a lot of the boxes that she did. I still thought, oh, you know, it's such a big amount of money to spend, like I'm not really sure yet. And then I think once I listened to, obviously, your podcast and just did my own research, I was just like, yeah, 100%. And even my family were like, yeah, I think that that's probably pretty true. And I was able to take the plunge and get myself diagnosed. But previous to that, I knew that full-time work was something I really struggled with because I do have children with high needs. Just being able to juggle appointments for them and caring for them, I've always found a real challenge, especially when working full time. And last year, apart from just juggling all that, I just noticed that I was just doing so much people pleasing at work. And also, I'm highly sensitive. I have a lot of sensory issues. And because I do teach a practical subject, being in noisy environments all the time, that on top of just all the responsibilities I was taking on at work, just meant I was coming home from work every day just sensory overload, exhausted, like a million things on my to-do list without a break. And, you know, when you come home with your kids, you're not able to take a break. You're just going to get straight back into cooking dinner and doing their homework and just getting all of that done. And I just noticed more and more, I was starting to develop some really intense physical issues. I was starting to get a really bloated stomach. My heart was racing all the time. All I can say is I just felt like there was this impending doom. I just said to my husband, I just feel like something really bad is going to happen. I feel like I'm not in a good place. I feel like I could end up in hospital. Like I just felt like something really bad was going to happen. And he said, you got to go see your GP. You just got to go to the doctor. And I went to my GP and she diagnosed me with severe anxiety. I was just really at breakdown point at that point. And she was able to get me on to medication, which just completely saved me at that point. It was really the anxiety that was building so much for me that I just couldn't sleep. I couldn't even interact with my children properly. I just got to the point where I just could not cope. Like I was terrified of actually taking them out on my own or being at home by myself with them. Not because I would do anything bad, but because I just knew I couldn't cope. I would be like crying. If there was like one little fight between them, I was just like at absolute breaking point and just couldn't handle any situation with them and set no boundaries, stick them on iPads, like whatever I needed to do just to have a moment's peace. So getting that help, and my doctor was really pleased that I came and I did. She said that took a lot of guts because a lot of people just don't see that before it's too late. And I mentioned to her that I'm pretty sure I've got some ADHD symptoms, and she agreed and she said, yeah, okay, I'll get your reference and we'll get onto the path to getting that diagnosis.
Wow. Thanks so much for sharing that, because that story feels really familiar for me. I love the way that you were really specific about how it played out, because I think that's so not spoken about. I think it was February, March this year. I feel like I was in a very, very similar position, like hiding in a walk-in robe, crying at the drop of a hat, unable to take my children to the most basic places for fear that one of them would run off, and being completely overwhelmed by very small things. And I hit like a huge burnout over a period of time.
Yeah, look, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm someone that cries that often, but it just took like nothing to set me off. And like I said, it was very physical. Like as soon as my kids would start arguing, or a lot of people on your podcast have talked about being in the car with their kids.
Oh my God, it's the worst.
It's a huge trigger. They just fight. And my heart basically felt like it was being squeezed every time they'd start arguing. And I was crying all the time and completely losing control of my emotions. I just felt like I was not being a good role model for my kids either. So they say you put your mask on first. It was that sort of thing. I feel like, thank goodness I helped myself, because otherwise I was going to be of no use to anyone. So I'm really glad that I actually did get the help when I did. And also something else that contributed to my burnout was I've been doing a lot of really heavy masking in my social circle. In my early 30s, my close friendship group, we all sort of separated. And even though we still keep in contact, you don't have that close network of friends. And I moved to a new area and didn't know anyone. And I've just found it really hard to find people who I can relate to. And so I was just doing a lot of masking just to try and sort of fit in and figure out where I fit. And that obviously came at a cost as well, because then I'd be coming home just going, I'm not being myself, and I don't feel like I've got my really close friends here. And so just on top of the work, the kids, the house, not having my social circle, it felt like it was all this impending doom just all came at me all at once last year.
I love the way you say impending doom, because my husband doesn't really understand anxiety. And I said to him, it's like the walking dead is coming, but there's no specific thing. So if he goes and problem solves one thing, he's like, don't you feel better? And I'm like, well, no, because the walking dead's still coming, and I find another problem to focus on. So I love the way you put that as an example.
Yeah, I don't think my husband really got it either. It was only when I got to the point where I was on the couch sobbing and just inconsolable, and he's just like, but, you know, our son, he just wouldn't put his shoes on. That's all. I'm like, yeah, but we can't get out of that house because he won't put his shoes on. It was just those sort of little things were just really getting to me. And he was just like, okay, yeah, you need to go and get some help, because I just couldn't cope with anything like that.
One of the things that does irritate me a little bit, and I think this can play out in any gender relationship, but I have a bit of a problem where I feel like if you're the partner that is having some kind of crisis or breakdown, and I don't have them very often, and it sounds to me like you don't either, but when you do, it's quite profound. But I'm in a very loving relationship. I love my husband dearly, and I call him a Labrador. He's like that big dog that everyone loves. You just love him. He's adorable, and he's always got the best of intentions, but sometimes he's a bit clumsy, you know, a bit like a Labrador. And I felt like I was so far into a full breakdown crisis before there was really any stop from him. Do you feel the same? Like it was so difficult to get him to fathom that I actually was really, really unwell, because he was thinking, well, you're still driving the kids to school. You're still releasing episodes. You're still cooking dinner. You seem like you're okay, but you're like broken inside, but people think you're okay because you're doing the basics. It really upset me, actually.
Yeah, I think that's exactly true. I'm like you. I don't have these massive breakdowns very often. I might have a few mini ones here and there, and it's always just this big build up. And I remember saying to my husband once, because I've been becoming more aware of my sensory issues, and it's just really just a self-awareness now. I've always had them there, but now that I'm more aware, I'm able to actually say what my needs are. And I remember we were going to go out somewhere to a kite festival as a family. I said, no, I just can't deal with the noise today. I'm just not going to be able to do that today. He said, but we used to do that all the time. It was never an issue then. I was just like, well, it was an issue, but I would just deal with it. But now that we've got the kids and I'm more aware of that, I know that that actually does really affect me. We decided to go, and it was just blasting so loud right where you could purchase the kites. And so we're standing in a line, this music blasting. And I said to my husband, I'm not going to be able to do this for very long. This is just not going to cut it for me. I need to get out of this space. So we got the kite, got out of that space. It was just grinding on my nerves, this thumping noise, the wind in my face, the dog barking. And so I said, we got to leave. We got to go. And then on the way home, because it was a bit of a trip to get there, the kids had their iPads. My son's iPad went flat. And then we realized, oh no, he's actually broken the connection to charge it. Sure enough, get home, huge tantrum about the iPad, that it's broken. My daughter had the iPad, he didn't have one. So he's screaming and yelling and he just starts hitting everything and walking around, stomping, slamming cupboards. And whilst he's doing that, the dog's out there barking constantly. So the noise was absolutely getting to me and I could feel the crushing in my chest. I could feel it just coming. And on top of all that, our dishwasher broke in the morning. So I had to take all the clean dishes out, dry all those, and then wash all the dishes whilst all the banging and the barking was going on. I just lost it. I threw a plastic bowl across the room, which I felt so ashamed. And I said, that's it. I'm leaving. I've got to leave. And my son ran outside with me. I was just like, this is not going to happen. My husband was feeling unwell as well. So I kind of had to deal with all this on my own.
Oh, I was about to say, could you tap out at that point and be like, hey, mate, I'm actually going to implode. I need to leave for 10 minutes.
Yeah, look, he tried to sort of help me, but my son's just so clingy with me, like he's a Velcro kid at the moment with me. So I just had to leave that and sit down and just have a cup of tea and watch a movie with him. And so I didn't get to do anything off my to-do list, but, you know, at least we calmed down.
I always find that when I'm dysregulated, my boys particularly pick up on it and they want to be with me more. So they chase me more, they whinge at me more, they won't leave me alone. And the more I ignore them because I can't cope with them, the more they want me. And then it goes on and on with hitting, touching me, crying on me, needing to be with me, clingy behavior. And then I like basically have to push all of my rage and my needs down the furthest possible to connect with them. My husband, I don't want him. And then I have to try and settle them down before I can just walk around to then regulate myself. Is that how you feel?
Oh, yeah. Like I've actually been trying to be more proactive with telling my kids about how I'm feeling, because I think that's going to be really important for them going through life to tap into that self-awareness. So I actually said to my son, Mummy has a really hard time processing loud sounds. Any loud sounds make my brain hurt and my tummy hurt. I feel like if I just keep using that kind of language with him, I'm hoping that he will understand my needs and then he will also start to understand his own needs, because he's the same. He does get upset by loud sounds, but then he also makes a lot of the loud sounds. So
it's a typical neurodivergent kid. It's like they don't want a loud sound, but yeah, it's okay if they make them.
Yeah, he's got this thing where our dog just gets set off by tapping because he thinks someone's at the door. He's a really gentle cocker spaniel, but he's just so protective of the house. And so my son will just go around the house knocking, tapping, just for the fun of it.
So he's sensory seeking. He's trying to get the input in, but you're also very sensitive to input.
Yeah.
So he's going around getting input, which is setting you off. The only reason I've realized that is because that's my life. I have a very, very sensory seeking son.
Yeah.
He has to make noise, sing, talk. He actually speaks 100% only in rhetorical questions. So every sentence has a question that you have to answer. If you don't answer it, he will continue to ask. So you can't actually ignore. You know how sometimes you let it wash over you, the long story?
Yeah.
He talks in rhetorical questions only. So it's like just being peppered with input. And he's on your leg. He's constant. And it sounds a bit similar with your son.
Oh, yeah. And he's extremely inquisitive. So he'll be doing something and then he'll ask the most random question like, Mum, how many brains does an octopus have?
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. My son's so similar. He's always like, Mum, I've been thinking, how does the moon get up there? Mm. Have you been assessed like through an ADOS or an autism assessment at all?
I haven't, but it's definitely been on my radar for a while. And again, I've just got that imposter syndrome because it's so much money. Obviously, with the ADHD diagnosis, I was like 100% sure. I was like, yeah, I'm going in and I know I'm going to get a script for medication. I've been doing research on this for the last 6 months or so. And it's interesting, like I've read about this, but I've also heard you talk about this too, about taking the medication. I just feel like my sensory issues have been really heightened since taking it. It definitely has crossed my mind, but I haven't sort of had the confidence to take that leap yet. And I've sort of touched on it with my husband and said, oh, you know, this might be me. But again, it's so hard with women because we do so much masking, but I start just looking in retrospect through my whole life. And there's just so many things in my childhood where I can actually think about, oh, that doesn't just seem like an ADHD thing. So yeah, I definitely think there could be something there, but I'm just not quite sure I want to take the leap just yet. And plus, because, you know, it's a lot of money.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, at the end of it, I think a lot of people are keen on an ADHD assessment because there's always the hope of medication. Will it work for everybody? Yeah. No. But there's the hope that something might change. But if you're diagnosed autistic, you're not left with any type of pill or there's no fix. It's just a difference, the way that you process information and you interact with people. Mm. I think obviously less women are going to go and get diagnosed because it's going to be a lot of money. And unless you can get on the NDIS, I suppose people think, what's the point? And I'm finger marking for everybody that's listening. I don't actually think, what's the point? But although I do think a self-diagnosis also is as good as a formal diagnosis. If someone's going to say, I've diagnosed myself autistic, it's not like there's a limited amount of people that can be it. So personally, I have no issue with that, although I know that some people do. One thing I just wanted to point out, Cara, I have a little bit of a pet peeve around some of the ADHD podcasts that have come out in the last couple of years, talking about sensory issues incorrectly with ADHD. Mm. And it's a pet peeve for me because there's already so much misdiagnosis around, right? So
yes,
if you're listening to a podcast and you're seeing yourself in the guest and they say they only have ADHD, yet they're listing all of these symptoms or all of these traits that could be, let's say, PTSD related or autism related. And so then you're assuming that that's all they have, or they list that as a ADHD trait. But I just wanted to strip something back really quick because I thought this was a great example that I read somewhere. And if we talk about noise, for example, ADHD response to noise is, I am writing down something right now and the TV is on. I cannot concentrate on what I'm writing because I can't get my brain to have a clear thought whilst that TV is going, that music is playing, those people are speaking. It's like I can't get the job done because I can't focus. So you get kids in a classroom, they can't read a book because everyone else is reading out loud. That there is ADHD noise related.
Yeah.
And this is particularly interesting when women take medication. So if you think, for example, I've always been a little noise sensitive and light sensitive, yes, not anything near what I am now, thanks to stimulant medication, which I still continue to take because it does the benefits. But I would hear it before, but I would also have raging ADHD. So my brain is already running on 8 tracks. Right? So yeah, I hear the music. Yeah, it's a bit loud. I might ask to turn it down, but I'm not outside hyperventilating in the backyard. I'm just a bit irritated and I might go off and do the washing maybe, but I'm not sensory overloaded in the way that you so beautifully described going to the kite place with the dog barking and the music, all of that. Like, that overloaded is a bit of a difference to not just ADHD, in my belief. Because now you've got ADHD medication on board, you've only got 1 track or 2 tracks. It's nice and quiet in there. And your ADHD shield is fallen, right? The ADHD is medicated. So you're almost got the nerves on the outside of your body. And now all the input, I call it hurting me. Like, it hurts me. Like you were saying about your son, it hurts your brain. I am unable to stay in this room. And that there, that sensory overload to that level of pain is more of an autistic trait. Not that I'm diagnosing you or anything.
No,
like,
no,
obviously that's a professional opinion. I don't want to do that. But I just want to highlight to everyone on there that is not just an ADHD sensory issue. And it could be anything there.
Yeah, making that distinction between the two is actually really helpful because I do feel that it hurts me and the heart racing. Like I know that it's all just building up to a simmering point with the noise. But I also get really affected by visual stimulation. So in particular at home, like there's dishes everywhere. I can't cook dinner in that. I got to clean it all. Even if we're going to have dinner at 8 o'clock, I've got to clean it all before I can do anything. I just can't. It just makes me feel really anxious if that's all happening. And likewise, if I'm at school and there's all these kids running around me, I feel like I've been spun around a little bit in the classroom. Like I sort of get really disoriented when there's kids everywhere, there's mess everywhere. Someone's yelling from that direction and then I think it's coming from over there. I get really disorientated with a lot of the sensory input that's coming in for me. So yeah, it's not really so much that I can't focus, I'm getting distracted. It's just, I just can't even function.
When kids, for example, they become overloaded in a classroom or my daughter has a socks and shoe issue. So I think we've successfully bought 4 pairs of shoes in her whole entire lifetime and she's nearly 9. So she will say it physically hurts. So she can't cope. She can't, like, it's so beyond a normal, whatever normal is, air quote, child's reaction to shoes that don't fit. It's so beyond that. And it's actually really painful for her. She can't focus. She can't, she's screaming. Like that's kind of how she is. Here's a question for you. You've obviously been a teacher a long time. How has it changed? So you've obviously been a teacher, undiagnosed ADHD, you've medicated the ADHD, and then you've become so overloaded that you've burnt out from the, again, air quoting, normal teacher responsibilities that you would have had before. How has that played out?
This year, I'm working part-time. I think that's been the biggest blessing for me. I'm only working 2 days a week. This is, so apart from being medicated, just taking away some of that workload. And also, I'm job sharing. So I think knowing that other person there, almost like body doubling, I guess, knowing that I'm accountable for someone else has really changed. Whereas last year, I just had all my own classes. It was just me. So I was just like, oh, well, if I do everything last minute, which I did, it's not going to impact anyone except me. But I think now that I am job sharing, I've obviously had to introduce all these healthy habits and seeing how someone else works has also made me see, oh, okay, there's some different strategies that I can also implement here that actually work really well.
I think it's great that you've been able to put the boundaries in and reduce workload. One thing I wanted to take a step backward to just talk a little bit more about flight gear change is when you spoke about the burnout that was coming, you spoke about the noise and the classroom, also about the children and all the noise at home. You mentioned briefly masking and having a new group of friends. I was wondering, sometimes I hear ADHD mums talk about whether they mask or not with their friends and they're actually unsure. I was wondering, could you step us through, like, for example, what it would be like to have an old friend that you're not masking with and what it was like masking with a new group of friends that led to the burnout?
When I think back to my old friends group, well, not old friends group, like they are my friends still, just being able to be real and have those actual hard conversations and just having someone listen and understand and get it. I think when you've got the history with someone, it just makes it obviously a lot easier to be vulnerable. But I think when you move into a new area and you don't have that history, you're less likely to be vulnerable, I guess, because you don't have that buildup of the pre-context and what you might have been like earlier in life. When I think back to when I was in my 20s, I think of a lot of the friends I had back then. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that they probably were neurodiverse because we all got along so well. I felt like I was really me. I was very authentic. And I think it's since I've been later in life coming to terms with having a bit of an identity crisis, especially since moving to this new area and being older, it's really hard to make friends when you're in your late 30s and 40s. And like I thought, oh, I'll make connections with all the school parents, but I find that whole thing really hard to navigate. I feel like there's a lot of close networks of friends, because I live in quite a small sort of suburb and it's quite a close-knit community. And I feel like it can be really hard to break into those networks if they're already established and you're coming in kind of new. And I'm not great with small talk. I find the school pickup so, like, I must come across as really antisocial, because I will stay in my car until that bell rings, and then I'll put my sunglasses on, beeline straight for the gate, and I'll just stand there. Like, I might say a few hellos, but I won't engage in any conversation. I don't know what it is about it. I just don't want to do the standing around with the school nurse chat. I just can't handle it.
Do you remember, because I know you listened to the podcast, I talk about one of the main things that led to me being diagnosed was my daughter hitting prep and having to walk in and stand there for 2 to 3 minutes and do small talk with people that I'm still friends with. So it's not that they weren't good people. I couldn't do it. And the school actually approached me because I had been going in 5 to 10 minutes early. I just went, like, but they're saying goodbye, getting my daughter and leaving because I couldn't do it. And then other people were saying to me it was their funnest part of the day. And I was like, no, I can't even fathom who these people are. Because I'd never hung out with neurotypicals before. But when you're in for the first time since I'd been at school probably, I had to be around neurotypicals, because I've always been in my own business, had a lot of freedom with work. So if I don't like people, I'm just not generally around them. So, for example, I'm always in a team with other neurodivergent people, or I hire them, or it just happens that way. But when you're in a school, you're in with everybody, because it's just a catchment or whatever it is, or whoever signed up to the school. And then that's when I hadn't actually been around, I don't think, neurotypical people for a long time.
I do have some connections with parents there that, you know, we've had some great chats at, like, children's parties and stuff that have kids that are neurodivergent. And that's been great. But I'll see those parents at the school pickup. They're having chats with other people. I just can't be in the whole group thing. Like, I just don't know how to actually get into the group without being super awkward. Even, like, people I see all the time, I'll just say, hi, and I'll just go over to the side because they're already chatting with someone else. And I'm just this awkward person coming over just saying, hi. And then I just stand there awkwardly. I don't know how to get into the conversation. So I just avoid it altogether.
It can be really tricky. I was watching my daughter's netball the other day and there was kind of like a group of people talking. And again, before having ADHD medication, this would not have been an issue. I would have stood, had a chat, watched the game. I couldn't talk, small talk, and watch a game. I was like, I can't be around, this is weather talk.
Yeah.
And where you parked. And hearing about someone else's son and how they're going at tennis, and I don't know the kid. I don't, like, what is that related to me? And it just felt like space fillers. And I was like, I couldn't deal with any more input. Like, I'm already watching a game. I'm already outside. There's already people clapping. There's people awkwardly standing in the way of the netball court. And I was like, why are those two men on their phone standing in everyone's view? Like, it was so frustrating. And then there's a speaker going, next thing, and then there's a brrr when their quarter's over. And then these people were just talking this, just, I actually thought to myself, this is so bad. But I thought, I reckon the neurotypical. And I was also thinking, is that what they think a conversation is? Because you know how neurotypical people like to have the surface chats, and they like to comment on the weather and, you know, what dog they have, or I don't even really know what they talk about, right? I find it really painful, so I usually move away and I make an excuse. Oh, the light's a bit funny there. I have to go over here. But I was just thinking, is that what they enjoy? Is that a conversation? Because I couldn't get my head around it. I was thinking, if we're not talking about something important or deep or relevant, why fill the space with words? Do you get what I mean?
Yeah. An example of those conversations would be like, talking about what lunchboxes to buy for the year. That just,
God.
Like, who cares? I just, I offend people by that, but I don't want to talk about that.
Like, no, it's, oh my God, you know what? It's like if someone starts telling you what solid their kid's eating. My son really likes eating this food. It's like, I don't even know your son. He's not even here. Like, I'll listen to that with a good friend when I know the kid and he's got a challenge with eating. Yeah, I'll listen to that for an hour. But where are we going with this? Like, no. I can't get my head around it.
I think that's why I didn't like mothers groups. I could not handle it. Also, my kid was like the screamer at
I
the time.
Like you and so, I've lived the yeah. same life. This is why you listen yeah. to the podcast. You must just be like, oh, this is so relevant.
Your examples, I'm like, that's me.
Yes, because whenever yeah. you give your examples, I'm like, that's me. And I've got that yeah. kid too. Okay. Yeah. I just want to ask one more question because I'm just fascinated, mm-hmm. right? Let me give you an example. Let's just say if you've had a really big argument with your husband or you've had a really rough morning and one of your kids have like done something out of the box that's just like really disruptive or really upsetting. You're like, oh my God, is this where we're going now? Like, I can't deal with another issue. Let's say there's something that's happened for you. If you were in your older friend group that you've known for a long time, I assume you would just be like, this happened this morning and it really frustrated me, and you'd probably just yep. vent it, right? If you're with the people that you're, you know, trying to impress or the new school mums, I always feel that pressure, like people will judge me for not being a good mum or not having a very good attitude yeah. or something. That is how, oh, everything's fine, thanks, how are you? Is that what you're talking about by masking?
Yeah, I guess I'm not able to fully say how it is. I feel like if I have before, I come across as like that whinging negative mum. You know, when you just get this sense like I'm that annoying person that they think, oh, she's just always so negative. So an example, like I said to this group of friends, we were talking about going to the supermarket. I said, I'd rather be in a jail cell for the rest of my life than have to take my kids to the supermarket. And they're like, what? Like, why? Like, they don't get it.
But you know what? That's really funny because I do the same thing and I feel like I come off negative or I have a bad attitude too. But if you're hitting the right person, it doesn't come off like that. But I have a bit of a problem with, I don't know why, after school holidays, I'm just like, is Saturday sport over yet? I don't want to have a 3 or 4 week break and then have to get back up, like attitude wise, and do another 3 to 4 weeks of soccer training and game. I just think, just finish it up. Like, this is done. I'm over it. We've all wound down. I don't want to go back into it. And anyway, we came up after school holidays and I had to walk in for the soccer training. There's one dad who I know has some autistic traits and he would say that. Like, that's not me talking behind his back. We've joked about it. And anyway, I always go over to him and chat because I also, another autistic woman trait, I do like talking to dads. I just find them straight shooters. They don't talk about lunchboxes and shit. They just, I just like them. Anyway, so I sidled up to this dad and him and I always have a bit of a laugh. I said to him, oh, mate, are you fucking done with soccer already? And he goes, yeah, I want to fucking get out of here. Let's just tell our kids that it's off and we'll just go off into the distance. I said, yeah, great, because my son's going to cling to yours. So we just got to rely on your kid forgetting. And he's like, oh, my kid's like, he's not going to remember. Mate, he doesn't even know what day it is. Great. So anyway, then this woman comes over and she's like, oh, what are you talking about? I said, oh, we're both fucking done with soccer and, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, I'm so excited about soccer training today. I just can't wait. It's my favorite time of the week. And I just looked at him and he looked at me and I was like, oh my God. And this other woman came over and then she's like, oh, I just love today. Don't you just love it? I've bought snacks for everyone to share. And I was like, oh no. So I know what you mean though. You come off like when you say what you really think, sometimes you come off like a bad mom or a bad parent. You don't care about your kids. Like, that's not it. I'm just tired. I can't be bothered standing around for an hour having weird chats. Yeah. I want to go home.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh gosh, I could tell you some soccer stories. So our son, this is before he was diagnosed at the start of the year, you know, super keen to play soccer, like loved doing the training, came to the first game, which wasn't at the normal oval he has training at, huge freak out, like what? Why are we at this oval? We can't play at this oval. And refused to wear the soccer socks and the shin pads, of course. And so even though the coach was lovely, like all of the parents were really, really lovely, he was just like, he can't go on without the shin pads. I said, well, he's not going to go on there. It's just, he's got some sensory issues. He doesn't want to wear the socks or the shin pads. Anyway, he let him on. And then the following week, it was the same thing. He just kept refusing to go on. And yeah, the whole masking thing, like you're just trying to cover up that, well, there's obviously something underlying here. We don't know what it is. They're just like, oh, he's a bit tired, is he? I'm like, yeah, he's a bit tired. Like, no, there's some more going on here. But, you know, I'm not going to divulge that right now because I don't even know. But, yeah, that sort of thing. And we just got to the point where you know, you don't want to be the black sheep family coming in with the kid that doesn't want to get on the field. And so we eventually said to him, do you actually want to play soccer? And he said, no. And it was just too much for him. It was just too many people, too much noise, putting on the socks, the uniform. Like, it all makes sense now. But having to go through that for so many weeks was just an absolute punish. Yeah. And just that judgment that you feel. And like, even though they were really lovely people, and I don't actually think they were judging us, you can't help but feel that. And I think that's when the masking comes out for me, if I feel like, oh, I'm coming across as a parent that's just not setting any boundaries for my kid and just letting them run wild and do whatever they want. It's just not the case. It's just, well, what works for your kid's not going to work for my kid. Telling them no at supermarket, that's not going to work, because they just throw themselves down on the ground, even if they're 7 years old, and will just kick and scream whilst everyone looks at them. They don't have that.
Yeah, it's really tricky, isn't it? And
yeah,
I've seen those kids before. I mean, I've got my own set of issues over on my end, but I have seen kids before that won't go on the field. And she's really heartbreaking to watch, because if you see the parent, it's like having a parent dealing with school can't, and you're seeing it.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you're so not judging, and all the people around you are just being as good as possible. But it doesn't matter what the people around you are doing. The parent is just dying inside.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that was just us.
So difficult. Yeah, it's so difficult. And even if people are really nice about it, it's just public. And that poor child doesn't want to go through that publicly either. So it's really tricky.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think it was actually a relief for the whole family when he just said, no, I don't want to do that.
But one trick that I have become quite known for is when I go to a birthday party or a school training or any type of thing to do with the school, I will pick out the most neurodiverse child I can see, hands down. You can usually see them. I find their parent, who's usually standing alone, and I backtrack to that parent, because that there for me is the quickest way of figuring out who's neurodiverse in the crowd. And then I can generally build a friendship with that person, and then generally they've got their own stuff going on and they're really happy to have a conversation that's real too. That's been a real game changer for me with some of the parenting, like dealing with other parents that I've had to do. I don't know if you've ever tried anything like that.
Well, like I said, I know like a couple of other parents that do have kids, but I haven't seen them at a lot of the parties. And I think I feel kind of bad for my daughter. Like, she actually just had her first play date ever at our house. And she said, Mom, other kids have had so many play dates. And that's because of me. That's my awkwardness, just being like, well, I'm not really friends, but, you know, I just sort of had to take that leap for her. And it was totally fine. Like, it was actually fine. I think I just have to kind of take the plunge, and you never know what people are going to be like if you actually are out of that. I think it's being in the school environment or being in a big group environment that can intimidate me. But if I have like someone one-on-one with me at my house, that's different. Like, I think I can work with that and build those friendships. I think I just find all of the group mums all together really intimidating. So
totally.
I think if I try and do that, building those relationships one-on-one first might help. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. But I think having someone over for a play date and having their parent come over, let's normalize how terrifying that is.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking to yourself, especially one of my kids, I'm like, I don't even know who they're going to be friends with. They could be friends with anybody. And then their parent turns up. That's pretty terrifying. So give yourself a bit of a break on that one. Like, I don't have random play dates with people to my house. Like, I find it really painful.
Yeah. Oh, we're just getting the house in a nice enough order to not feel embarrassed.
Oh, totally. But then, you know, the kid comes in, they want to touch your kid's toys, and then they don't want to share it. And then you got to like scaffold that. It's like, oh God, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will finish up. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we go, Kiara?
So one thing I have found really helpful, which I was really surprised about with just, you know, knowing my limitations and being able to set boundaries later on, I've actually started journaling.
Great. So good for you.
Just using this app, it's actually really like been a game changer for me. Just writing little notes, and it's got little templates in it. So I have like sensory issue, just so I can keep track of what's going on, and I can kind of monitor, okay, that's been happening a lot. You need to do something to take time out. Because I feel like that's what's been the bad thing for me last year. I just didn't have that self-awareness, or I wasn't tuning in enough, or actually identifying what I needed. So I think that's been my main thing, setting those boundaries, is having that awareness. Yeah.
Excellent. Look, thank you so much for your time, Cara. It's been such a great interview. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Shane. Thanks for having me on.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.